If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and a reality check you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Up Your Brave Show with Natalie Cutler-Welsh here on Reality Check Radio. Today, we're going all the way to Canada, my hometown, my home country. We're talking to Lorraine Smith on the topic of the path to industrial healing. Lorraine is a speaker, a writer, a visionary, and a childhood friend of mine. Welcome to the show, Lorraine.
Hey, Natalie. It's great to see you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So good to see you. I'm having to adapt because back in the day, I was Nat and you were Lori, and now we're all grown up. For those of you that don't know Lorraine, after two decades in corporate sustainability and ESG, B. Lorraine Smith realized these efforts were worsening the problems they aimed to solve. Now she's challenging industry norms and confronting hard truths. Lorraine's unique approach, engaging leaders without blame while addressing difficult realities, has made her a valued advisor across sectors, including mining, energy, chemicals, banking, agriculture, retail, and tech. Her expertise in ESG strategy, investor communications, and executive engagement was honed through leadership roles at Canadian Business for Social Responsibility and Sustainability before becoming independent in 2016. With multilingual abilities and cross-regional experience, Lorraine has collaborated with global change agents like Volans and ESG leaders such as Suzano. Her career began at the World Wildlife Fund Canada, I didn't know that, followed by roles in B2B electronics and business analysis at Manulife Financial. Today, Lorraine writes, coaches, and advises forward-thinking executives towards an economy where businesses thrive by enabling societal and biosphere well-being. Oh my goodness, it's so fascinating to see the path that you've taken since we parted ways when I think we were back in primary school, living around the corner from each other. I would love to hear my own self and also for my audience. Can you give us a little bit more detail about the journey, the backstory that led you to this point of being able to talk today about the path to industrial healing?
Sure, I'd be glad to. And I realized, you know, I left a really fun detail out in my bio where that B2B electronics moment was actually in New Zealand. I lived in New Zealand in Auckland for a year. Lots I could say about the years before I got involved in sustainability, corporate social responsibility, sometimes called CSR, leading to ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance data disclosure management. I'll just say for the first sort of 15 years or so of my professional career, I did lots of stuff, worked at World Wildlife Fund, worked in electronics in New Zealand, et cetera, kind of a checkerboard past. And there came a moment when I was working at a financial services company, Manulife Financial, headquartered in Toronto. And I was in a really funny role when I look back. It's sort of the universe winks at us sometimes, right? She's very wily and wise. And I was in a role where my job was to bridge the IT tech folks, the ones building the online calculators for people saving for retirement, and the marketing department. And the marketing department, of course, wants to say to banking and investment clients, put lots of money away and you'll be rich when you are older. And the tech folks are like, how does this widget work? We need to know what the code has to say. And this is in the early part of the century when there's kind of online banking, but it's very early. And I had this bridge role where I was coordinating between marketing and tech. And I kept hearing them talk about how we needed to push people to put more and more money into their accounts. And I kept asking, well, why don't we help them understand what the money's doing over the decades that it's invested for retirement? And people kept looking at me like, what are you, crazy? Nobody cares what it's doing. They just want to know there's a lot more of it when they retire. So that was 2003. I stepped away from that. That was my last corporate role. And I went away for a while. I traveled across Canada by bus, knitting and spinning a blanket. That's a whole other story. And when
I have to connect you to Marie Buskey from Counterculture. She has a knitting podcast.
Oh, awesome. Oh, yeah. Well, knitting's a thing and spinning's a thing within knitting. And of course, New Zealand it was very important that I spend some time there from my fiber arts perspective. But in terms of my earning a living and contributing to the industrial economy that we're all part of, whether we wanted to be born into it or not, when I came back from that trip, a dear friend of mine that used to work at World Wildlife Fund called me up. I'm at a farm at a spinning and weaving exhibit, and my cell phone rings and she says, "Hey, Lorraine, have you spent all your money yet? Do you need a job?" I was like, yes and yes. And so she hooked me up with some folks at Canadian Business for Social Responsibility. And that was 20 some years ago. And for the ensuing two decades, I basically cut my teeth in the emergent sustainability or corporate responsibility world. And what that became was skills in stakeholder engagement, in investor communications, et cetera, all the kind of corporate consulting type skills related to a company's social and environmental impacts. And in theory, that's where I would have liked the story to end. That was really interesting work. I got to do more and more of it. I speak Portuguese, I speak French, I speak German. So I got to go to lots of interesting company headquarters, do really cool stuff. But the problem was, as I understood it, the harder we tried to have really ambitious climate goals or really profound social engagement, et cetera, the more I saw we were actually contributing to the problem, or at least stalling its truly being solved. Simply put, it was my belief, and it was only getting deepened by what was going on, that all the sustainability activities, all the ESG reporting, all of these seemingly well-intended efforts were at best distractions and at worst, sometimes actually furthering the problems. I could say more about that. But there came a moment where I realized that I was just part of the problem and I had to get out. So in January 2016, it's hard to believe how many years ago that is now, I walked away from my last paycheck. I continued to freelance and I kept thinking, well, now that I'm on my own, I can be more courageous. I can pick more avant-garde clients or folks who are really committed to making real change, you know, doubling down. It took me a few years to realize I was still in the problem. I just didn't have a paycheck. I was sort of freelancing, actually doing fairly well. There was real growing demand for sustainability consultants. Finally, once and for all, in 2021, I pulled the plug entirely on doing corporate gigs. I just said, enough. We are not working in service of life. The economy is not serving us. We are serving it. We are being, in all kinds of different ways, chained to a system that is extracting our health, our wellness, our freedom, our ability to look after self, one another, and our beautiful biodiverse world. And I don't want to contribute to that. I want to contribute to the system that comes next, that's all around us, that's already emergent. And that is one where industry has gone through a healing process, like many of us as individuals, and that we meet our needs for all the things we do really need and want and enjoy in ways that make us healthier, that truly restore us. So that's what I'm up to these days. It's a long and winding road to get me onto the path, really, to industrial healing.
I feel like you almost saw that trend of the sustainability. So it's like subservience under the guise of sustainability to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And I feel like because you stepped out with intention and back in 2016, it's almost like you were ahead of your time for me, because there'll be other people in this field that kind of saw, like, oh my gosh, I'm part of the problem. You know, other people that saw it, but so many don't. And I feel like so many people today are still in that world. You know, they're in that realm where, and some of them I know quite personally, you know, where they really think they're doing the right thing and they really think they're doing good. And I, absolutely, I was so set up to be that person. I studied international development. You know, I have got a master's in environmental education. I was stood for the Green Party. A lot of my listeners know some or all of that. I was an Outward Bound instructor. I loved, you know, the outdoors and nature. And I so easily could have become that person that was carbon counting and, you know, talking all about, you know, climate change. And I didn't, but how did you kind of see it? How did you see what others couldn't see way before COVID showed so many of us the scams, I feel, that we're surrounded by?
Yeah. Well, Thank you for the question. It feels very validating and encouraging. To be very honest, I kind of have two answers to that. One is sort of a little embarrassing to admit, which is I sort of joke sometimes that one of my superpowers is cluelessness. Like, I miss a lot of things that people are talking about or doing. I don't take in much media at all. And by media, I don't just mean like, I don't know, MSNBC. I mean like things on screens. I really enjoy reading. I really like books, you know, old fashioned mm-hmm. things on paper that are bound at the spine. I really love being outside and just kind of what I call like looking around. So what that means is I miss a lot of stuff that everybody else is watching. And so narratives, they miss me altogether. So I have this habit of showing up in spaces and asking questions where, like, kind of like when I asked working in the retirement savings industry back in the early 2000s, when I was like, well, hey, why don't we tell people what their money's doing? And people look at me like I'm some kind of Looney Tune, because that was just not where the dialogue was. It was not where the marketing incentives were, et cetera. So part of why I saw things in ways that others weren't seeing, I think, is because my vision wasn't crowded by all the things being jammed in front of us. Mm. That sometimes leads, it's sometimes a bit of a liability, but that's another story. I guess the other reason that I feel I've been very fortunate actually to pick up on some signals is I don't really subscribe to a kind of left or right view. I mean, I think like you, I would have been inclined towards voting green. Definitely would have, you know, I worked at World Wildlife Fund. That was my first job out mm-hmm. of school. So I would identify with people who were concerned about preserving wild spaces or, you know, being concerned about endangered species, et cetera. But I never really felt that I identified left or right. And in fact, I have a very clear memory of when my dad, I don't know if you remember, my dad was a senior civil servant. So, and of course our father.
I remember your dad. I don't know what he did though.
Yeah, he was a deputy minister in the Ontario government for quite a while. So he was a senior civil servant, which meant that he was apolitical. So that's one of the more senior non-elected offices that you can hold in the provincial government. And so what that meant was we were often talking about politics without being political in my household. And I remember my dad explaining to me what left and right were in, you know, fairly simple terms. We're probably in like in 1982 here. And the more I thought about it, the more I remember thinking, well, aren't they kind of the same thing? Like, I felt like you go one way with right and the other way with left, but they would ultimately meet in this kind of hyper exclusionary zone. And none of that really appealed to me. I want to also just give credit where it's due, because very little of it is due to me. I feel like I'm more of a sensor. And as in I sense things versus cutting them out, censor. And I'm also very, very sensitive to voices that aren't often heard. And that might be non-human or that might be marginalized people. So in Canada, of course, our Indigenous friends and neighbors were very much not at the table as a lot of things, decisions have been made, resources have been allocated. And that was becoming increasingly apparent to me when I moved back to Canada, which I did from New York in sort of 2018, 2019, I kind of arrived in the footprint of Canada's so-called truth and reconciliation process. A lot I could say about that, but I was quite sensitized to the Indigenous conversation and was very fortunate to make some close friends and be kind of exposed to really very, very different points of view about how the so-called corporate progress and success really played out in some very important ways. And likewise, things like riverbanks and forests. I mean, a really simple example would be, for some reason, for a long, long time, when I would go into parks, I would be very aware that I wasn't really in nature, as we call it. You know, I was in a very manufactured zone that had pretty much been a clear cut with some big trees left standing and designed in a kind of aesthetically packaged way so that the nice people could have something fun to do on a weekend afternoon. And that was very offensive to me. I felt like, where did what about the other trees? You know, and who decided? Why did those trees get to stay? And why is this park here and not there? And why do we call it a park? And then say, you got to go there if you want to be outside among trees, when you can then legally devastate the rest of our communities and pave them over. So for some reason, I was just kind of sensitive to those voices. I don't know.
I think we need so much. We need people like you, people like that in society. I call them the seers, people who see life from a higher vantage point. And they, because they're not, like you said, crowded with all this other information, claustrophobic information coming at them, they're able to see from a wider perspective and see how things can be done, but also to question different questions like you've done. How can things be done? So that's why I feel like you're almost ahead of your time. And here in New Zealand, you know, we have a show on Reality Check Radio called Greenwash with Jazz Preet and Dawn, and they question things like the ESGs and sustainability. What are some things that you're concerned about in terms of right now, you know, 2024, whether it's internationally or in Canada, in terms of that kind of eco greenwash situation?
Yeah, it's a big question. I think the two things that concern me most are that the most well-intended folks don't have really solid information to go on. There's a lot of misguided information out there. And then whether I like it or not, I'm coming to believe there are not so well-intentioned folks. And the game is kind of rigged, and the incentives work really well for them. And when you put those two things together, you get some very dangerous situations. So, for example, on climate, you know, there's lots of controversy and disagreement. Personally, I feel quite strongly that we are collectively, as a sort of industrialized society, we are degrading the wellness of the living systems that support us. And we're doing that in lots of ways. We're channeling water to go where it wasn't meant to go and removing it from where it was meant to be. We're ramping up the toxic load in our soils and therefore in our bodies and in our waterways and in our, you know, birds and other creatures. So there's lots of ways I could describe that I'm deeply concerned that we are causing harm to our natural environment. And I tend to avoid the word climate for lots of reasons. But the number one reason for me is because it's very distracting. Like when I look at, for example, Canada's climate action plan, Nat, I don't know if you've taken a look recently, but it profoundly disturbs me. So a couple really simple examples. There's big push for this kind of net zero. And just two examples of net zero that honestly break my heart and also, I think, confuse a lot of people that we're on track. We're very, you know, we're ambitious, good old Canada, right? One is around amping up our accessibility to electric vehicles. And what that means is huge subsidies to people who buy electric vehicles and enabling huge subsidies. To be fair, if you buy a new electric vehicle, you get a $5,000 rebate. So you get $5,000 cash put in your pocket. And okay, that's not a huge subsidy, but it's adding up. It's adding up to millions and millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. Taxpayer money going to people to buy new cars. The net effect of more cars, and you know, I'm sorry, I don't have those numbers here, but I can offer, if anybody's interested, I can definitely make it easy to find that information in a link. I'll follow up with you. The number of new cars that have been purchased in that program, it's thousands of new cars just in the brief years that have been that subsidy has been around. So what does that subsidy do? It puts more cars on the road. What do more cars on the road do? They heat up cities, right? They require more pavement, more lanes of traffic. I don't know the last time you were in a major city up here in Canada. It is so congested. And people talk about the traffic and it's like, you know, yay, more of those things are EVs. That is not cooling the atmosphere. It is not cooling the regions that are overheating because they've lost their trees and water. Not to mention the mining and like, I'm not even going to go there.
The lithium, yeah.
Yeah, that's just, yeah. And the, there's so much I could say about mining. With respect, we are all mining, by the way. We are all in this. So I also am very cautious about the us and themness that can happen. I see this as all of us. There are no sides here, although there are areas of emphasis, let's just say. But here's another example of what worries me about Canada's net zero and climate action. You know, you go on their net zero plan And you see all the fun little thumbnails of all the windmills and all the things. Well, one of the little thumbnails you see is how Canada encourages recycling. And the image they have, I'm not making this up, like the image they have is of kids putting things in a recycling bin. The recycling bins are so big that like multiple children could fit in them. And I'm not sure why we think that is a good sign, that we've got so much garbage and we've got so much of it that kids can put it into receptacles that are even bigger than they are. Aside from the fact that it's bonkers that we actually produce that much waste, like what are we doing with that waste? It's even more bonkers that only about 9% of it in this so-called very climate progressive country is actually recycled. So you've got receptacles so big that human beings could fit in them, filling week after week after week. We're calling it recycling.
And it's celebrated.
The vast majority is not recycled. So that worries me because people believe they're helping. They believe they're like, well, you know, I make sure my kids rinse all the jars and recycle them. And it's like, that's great. That was just more garbage, actually. And they think they're helping the world by buying a Tesla. And it's like, no, we need to consume so much less than we're consuming that it would really annoy a lot of people to genuinely take that in. Yeah, that's what I see going on around here and most, frankly, most so-called developed economies where they have these progressive climate-oriented targets that actually don't really help us, as far as I can tell.
Well, it sounds like a really similar playbook to New Zealand with the, you know, carbon zero goals and things with different people, you know, planting trees. I mean, it's great to plant trees, but one of the concerns here in New Zealand is if you're planting pines and they're like, look at us, you know, we're planting all these pines for, you know, to offset the carbon emissions. But they don't talk about the acidity to the soil, which then kills the native plants. And do you have the same problem in Canada? I'm not super familiar with the foliage over there.
Yeah, well, so I'm also, I skipped part of my career. I was an industrial tree planter during school time. So I was, I put a lot of trees in the ground. I mean, oh, Nat, there's so much here. I would love to talk to your greenwashing colleagues because we, you know, for sure, tree planting is a thing. I am kind of embarrassed sometimes to say, I think I like trees better than I like most people. I absolutely adore trees. I've learned more from trees than I have from, I guess, trees and rivers and migratory birds are my greatest teachers. So I'm certainly not opposed to putting more trees in the ground. But aside from the kind of meddling concerns that you describe, where you're putting one species where it's maybe not meant to be and all the knock-on effects of that, I'd say there's an even wider concern that bugs me, which is all the tree planting schemes in the world, even the most kind of biosensitive, where we really go with native species and we do all the smart things, are moot if the industrial machine that is causing the clear cutting, causing the paving, causing the condos to go up, all the other incentives that push cities to make terrible decisions because they need the property tax income, because they need the investment income, whatever it is, it really won't, it not only won't solve the problems, in my opinion, it will barely mitigate them. So I something I want to make really clear here, I see an incredible opportunity to depolarize because there are folks who just think the whole conversation about climate is hogwash. And there are folks who think, no, it is not hogwash. It's an emergency and we have to do absolutely everything we can. Plant, EVs, you know, all the things.
Windmills on every hill.
Right. And I have the kind of uncomfortable point of view of saying, I think they've both completely lost the plot and neither of them is serving those migratory species, those healthy waterways, your children, you know, they're really not. And getting deeper entrenched into why, you know, they're right and the others are wrong is also not helping. And so what I am really craving in these corporate actions, these government actions, is what I would think of as basically common sense. Can you demonstrate how this is genuinely enabling greater biodiversity? And can you be really honest? This is the missing part. It's quite dark. It's really uncomfortable to go there. But can we be honest about how we got here? Like this is decades for many regions, it's centuries of a very extractive, very exploitative, often very oppressive, sometimes quite racist or paternalistic or patriarchal approach to just, you know, this is mine, I'm going to take it. And private property is here to hoard, private wealth is here to hoard. And, you know, them's fighting words with some folks because you encroach on freedom. But it, I think we have to be honest about how we got here. So yeah, that's a darker area. I don't know how far you want to go into that.
Well, I think some of the problem, especially with the environmental stuff, not to mention also the health stuff, is modeling, right? So they'll do this modeling, which is not really based on, you know, it might be based on a certain amount of time frame, but they haven't gone back far enough for it to be, you know, how they can laser focus and make it look like something when it's not. So right. It's that, as you said earlier, misguided information. And it's, what are your thoughts on that? And like the impact of modeling or misrepresented modeling on people's perspectives?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question, Nat, because, I mean, this idea that we can look at anything in isolation and understand it is problematic. I mean, one of the great examples I learned as I've gone deeper into ideas around agriculture and soil health and the relationship to food and our guts and our minds, and you bump into, and I'm sure you have there as well, the notion of regenerative agriculture or things like permaculture, where the production method is sort of self-reinforcing in ways that create greater biodiversity, healthier guts, et cetera. And one of the really great ahas, because I was sort of like, well, you know, why isn't this just the way we do things? You know, like it just makes so much sense. And one of the reasons that was given to me speaking probably a decade ago now with an agronomist was that up until fairly recently, most soil samples were viewed in isolation. So if you take a soil sample into the lab and you study it, you're going to see things, and those things are going to be true, but they're not going to be what's actually going on out in the field. So the challenge of seeing things in their dynamic complexity, we are just not trained to do that. I don't know how we solve for that. I mean, yeah, this notion that all models are broken. And we know it, and the map is not the territory, and we know it, but we're still using models and we're still using maps. So
exactly. And that brings us kind of looping into the, I guess, the past 4 years or so, you know, the modeling, that was a problem. They told us, you know, this is the curve, we have to flatten the curve, and you all need to do this and that. So I'd love to just go there a little bit. And, you know, in terms of Canada, like New Zealand, I think, and I'm kind of biased, or I'm allowed to say this. I'm as people know, I'm a hybrid of both. I'm genetically Kiwi, but I was born and raised in Canada. Sure. And we're a very lovely, compliant society, generally speaking. So I'd love to know from your perspective, not so much what happened, but what is the pulse of the nation in Canada right now? Are more and more people like you starting to see things from a higher perspective, maybe question things like the health modeling or the ESGs? Or do you think there's still a really big proportion of the population that are still very, very indoctrinated?
Yeah, well, to add to the complexity, I'm sitting here in Quebec. So I'm based in Montreal for now. As we were chatting, I'm moving to Northern Ontario soon, but I'm from Toronto. We grew up around the corner. I now live in Montreal, Quebec, and Quebec is distinct. So it is a nation within another nation, which is a whole other kettle of fish. So maybe I'll just say my superpower of cluelessness serves me well here. I don't really know what the pulse of the nation is. I'll say when things were getting kind of furry around, you know, in the early days of 2020, the indicators I watched were, because I knew a lot of people who were watching the news and basically watching a death count. And so for me, that was a very interesting kind of propaganda technique because it's very clearly fear-based. So the more scared people are, the more compliant they are, for good reasons, right? They're concerned about their children. They're concerned about their elder parents and loved ones. But in any context, I think making decisions based in fear is problematic and to be avoided, not because it will necessarily be the wrong decision, but the likelihood of considering all possibilities starts to shrink when you're scared, when you're feeling scarcity. So one indicator, because I don't have a TV, there was no TV for me to watch the death count, but I found it quite interesting to hear in different channels. I'm in a lot of channels. I communicate with folks almost daily in Brazil, in Ethiopia, in the UK, different parts of Europe, different parts of Canada, in multiple languages. So I was kind of feeding and being fed by a bunch of different conversations. And I was seeing a real distinction between people who were fixated by the news and people who were kind of just watching like, wait, so you're telling grandparents that they aren't allowed to be near their grandchildren. So that was a big red flag to me. Like anytime generations are being kept apart and the ones who are the caregivers in the middle are being forced to manage that. And so they're stressed beyond their capacities. That's a clear signal that, you know, there are unnecessary tensions that are going to make it harder to make healthy decisions. To be honest, I'd say that continues in different ways, right? We have different things to keep watching the TV and be terrified about. We have different reasons to hoard and distrust. And I don't know that we've really changed. I certainly feel in a very diverse and supportive community. And I also feel I'm learning slowly, cluelessness is not serving me here, when to ask some of those bigger, more challenging questions, and when to just listen and stay present and be open to caring and loving anyway, and not trying to force a perspective. So I think it's as true now as it was 4 years ago, to be honest.
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? I know you and I have both had challenges with friendships and family with alternate views, as our listeners have. And by the way, if you've just joined us here on the Up Your Brave show, I'm talking today to Lorraine Smith, who's based in Canada, a childhood friend of mine. And we're talking about the path to industrial healing. Such a fascinating time. You know, it's interesting. I've had in the past week or two, I've had at least three people who have had young people who have had pneumonia. Well, young. Okay. I consider myself young. So let's say they're in their late 40s, you know, 50s. And one of them, she said to me, you know, what do you think is causing it? And I said, okay, do you want my honest opinion? Like that's what, so she asked me, and then my response was, have you had a jab or a booster recently or the flu jab? And another woman, she told me that she had Bell's palsy and also pneumonia. And I said, are you open to hearing, a perspective? So I kind of asked her if it was okay for me to ask a question. And I asked the same question. I guess my point here is I haven't had many people at all come to me and say, hey, Nat, you know, can you explain to me about the Ukraine wars? You know, I haven't had anyone ask me about the world and things that I actually have opinions on that are not what we're fed in the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. But I have had a few people ask me some questions like that, like, oh, yeah, I wonder why. I have no idea why I got pneumonia. And I'm like, are you open to hearing some thoughts? So it's an interesting time. What are you finding with the Canadian scene? I know you said you kind of live in your own world and a little bit cluelessness, but specifically, I mean, politically, you know, you've got Trudeau over there who is, you know, he's interesting in his own way. The wildfires. I mean, I would love to, whenever I talk about the Canadian wildfires, I do quotation marks because I don't think they're wild. I mean, they're going wild, but I don't think they were a natural cause. I think they were created. What are your thoughts on that if you're open to sharing?
Yeah, you're the first person that I know of that has said that they're not wild. And I was actually doing some research last year in the last round of fires around the occurrence of the word wildfire versus fire or forest fire or other ways of expressing the phenomenon, because maybe I'm simply misremembering, it's certainly possible, but we did not call those wildfires when we were growing up. And now the word wildfire has spread like wildfire. And you can say, it's just a word, right? It's just a word. But language is a very powerful tool. Mm-hmm. I've come to realize it's not only a powerful tool, it's often weaponized, and weaponized in ways that we don't necessarily recognize as seeding and creating harmful pathways. So there is this belief that, can you believe it? Like things just caught fire. And it's like, okay, let's just back up. And to be very candid, although I know that there have already been severe fires in Canada in 2024, I have not been tracking them. So I'm talking generally, and I'm talking specifically about when I've looked into fires that were happening here in Quebec last year. So there's all kinds of reasons to fact check what I'm saying right now in relation to what's going on at West, I think. But when I looked at what was going on in Quebec, these were plantation-based monospecies industrial forests. And they were planted where there had been so much disturbance to the natural growth over centuries. I mean, it's unrecognizable from a kind of natural forest perspective. And without question, that influences a region's capacity to burn, to regrow, et cetera. And a really simple example, and I'm betting, you know, I lived in New Zealand in 1998, and I remember doing lots of amazing tramping and whatnot, where I was very fortunate to walk in some very old growth areas and some newer growth. So I'm guessing your audience will be familiar with this. Your feet can tell you when you're in old growth and when you're in a plantation, and your ears can tell you. Your feet can tell you just because the ground is a little more kind of wobbly, right? It's not so flattened like a giant cornfield. And your ears can tell you based on who's hanging out in the trees and what species are still able to kind of live their lives. And forests have been burning since forever. And those are wild fires. But the fires that are taking out huge swaths of growth in this part of the world, those areas have not been wild since long before you and I were born. So what concerns me greatly is first of all, it's very dangerous and scary. People are losing their homes, losing lots of, you know, it's horrific for the people directly involved. Lives are being lost. And of course, the animals and all the threatening things that happen when your home and your town burn. And then when you widen the radius a little bit and you go outside of the immediate danger, there's just this chronic perception of, oh my God, you know, now it's this, now it's that, it's a hurricane, it's a wildfire. And there's very little opportunity for people, just sort of everyday folks, to ask, you know, what's my role in this? What part of this industrialized economy am I benefiting from? And am I investing further in? And, you know, I was a tree planter, industrialized tree planting, which, by the way, we're all part of, right? Like if you use toilet paper, I'm going to just go out on a twig, and no pun intended, and say that came from a tree plantation, probably a eucalyptus plantation, probably in Brazil or China. And that's how the toilet paper industry works. They made out like bandits at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah.
If we're serious about restoring our ecological integrity, it's not a tweak. It's not a like, oh, we need more certified forests. It is a wholesale rebuilding of how we understand forestry. Like even the word forestry, there's a weapon right there. We talk about it like it's an industry. Like those trees are there for us to take, monetize, chop up, do what we will with. When actually forests, even a single tree, is an entire community, sometimes decades old, sometimes centuries old. And then we barge in, like we get to decide what happens to that community. So yeah, that's what I think about the wildfires.
Well, it's interesting because I've got, I share that view as well, but I also probably have more of a conspiracy-ish view where I do believe in climate engineering, and I possibly also believe in direct energy weapons in terms of making a certain land or housing damaged and more volatile such that it can then be purchased back, such that it can then be sold or purchased by some and used for something else. So, you know, there's lots of things, there's lots of questions to ask. And what I don't like seeing, and what I do see a lot of, is people going, oh my gosh, did you hear about the wildfires? And just like they did, oh my goodness, did you hear that this many people have died from COVID? And all they're doing is Chinese whispering about what, you know, just spreading the word about what, and fear mongering unintentionally, but they're not asking the question going, huh, are they really wild? Like why is this happening? So let's question these things.
Yeah. So if I can comment on that. So I don't disagree. And I almost feel like whether or not the conspiracy ideas are correct, it's not that I'm not interested. I'm always very curious, like what is really going on? But I just duck underneath all of that and say, I can't run that down. Like I got a link to back every story up, right? And I'm sure you've seen the links, and then you've got the counter links. And it's not because I don't care. but more, I want to stay very grounded in what can I know here and now? So for instance, when the COVID stuff was going on more acutely than it is now, of course, it's still going on, I could see and I could speak directly with, and I did with as many people as I could, that real harm was being caused by keeping grandparents and grandchildren apart. Mm-hmm. And I don't need to be a doctor. I don't need to be an immunologist. I don't need like my own private hazmat suit collection to observe that causing acute pain to our elders is never a good idea. And just sitting with that, not accusing the people, because I'm sure you met there as well. I met lots of people involved in policy in various degrees, like trying to fight for more freedoms, but also trying to fight for more lockdowns and more masks and whatever. And I would say everybody I talked to genuinely wanted to do the best they could for their children's health, for their family's health. Even if I didn't agree with what they were doing, I definitely believed they were truly well-intended. So I never actually, in my own personal experience, I have not directly encountered people where I would say that person is up to something dodgy. They've got a plan and I don't like it. And so I really try to stay grounded in what can I truly see here and now. When I go to a park, I can see that there were lots of older trees because I can see really big old ones and then I see lawn. Okay, that's what we call a clear cut where they left a few standing. Why did the park designers do that? Why did the city planners? I'm curious, I'd like to know, but I'm going to try to stay grounded in what I can genuinely understand. And then where is my swim lane to contribute to what feels better and not energize what feels worse? So I love that you're hosting this show. Your swim lane is to lift up people's voices, you know, up all of our braves, et cetera. And you're crossing multiple channels, multiple disciplines. And for whatever reason, my last couple decades, I've been this like ESG disclosure ninja, kind of by accident. I don't know anybody else who spent over two decades going deep into the corporate disclosure trenches, who also happens to speak Portuguese and spent time in the plantations in Brazil, who happens to speak French, who happened to go to Ethiopia. Like, I have this weird convergence of awareness backstage across sectors that gives me perspective. I might as well put it to good use. But why? You know, I can tell you that Glencore, one of the largest mining companies in the world, earned an additional over $37 billion in 2022. And their own CEO says it right in their annual report that that was because of the war in the Ukraine, because along with mining, lithium and coal and all kinds of other nasties, they also, quote unquote, market energy, which means they own the energy supply on both sides of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. So they earned an additional 37 plus billion US dollars. That was on top of hundreds of billions. They just come right out and say it, that we got that extra money because of the war.
Yeah.
Is that a conspiracy or are those just really bad incentives baked into our economic norms? I think most of the time it's the latter. You are rewarded for doing really shitty things in this economy. You are rewarded for ripping holes in the ground and selling the stuff you pulled out to companies who are going to do other stuff with it. We don't even need the conspiracies to do really broken, bad stuff. And yeah, but having said that, I can't really argue with what you're saying. I can just say, oh, there's enough trouble. I don't even need to go too far down those roads to have work to do in my swim lane, if you will.
Well, I mean, I think all of the years of the work that you've been doing, like you said, with the multitude of languages and the multitude of industries, I feel like your time is coming. Do you know what I mean? And I think for a lot of our listeners, do you feel like your time is coming? I mean, I feel like I've been training my whole life for what's coming and I don't know what's coming and I don't really know what I was born for, but I feel like, you know, we just need a few things to fall into place in society and humanity for us all to step into what we were born for. And I agree with you, Lorraine. I feel like most people generally and during the COVID years really thought they were doing the right thing. And even coming back to the sustainability, the ESG conversation, I do feel like most people, you know, they feel like they're doing the right thing. They feel like they're doing good. And I guess we're just going to have to wait and see how things land and be ready to support each other. And it's not, like you said, it's not us and them, and it's not left and right. And it's not you were right and I was wrong or whatever. It's we're all just trying to do our best. We sometimes don't know what to believe. We sometimes many of us believe everything we're fed. And then there's people like me that are like, nah, I take everything with a grain of salt, but only because of the last 4 years. I wasn't like this but prior. And I've become more discerning and possibly more, I wouldn't say more negative, I'm positive, but I'm definitely more discerning than I was before. I'm going to go to the up your brave question. I'd love to know, if you were to truly up your brave in the remaining months of 2024, what would that look like to you?
Yeah, I've given this question some thought. I love that you present it because it really is a like, okay, so put your money where your mouth is kind of question, right? I think the call to increased bravery for me is getting really clear. I was going to say comfortable, but forget comfort. Saying to more and more senior industry players, this is not a tweak. We're not saying, could you be a little more sustainable? Could you be a little more eco-efficient? Could you be a little nicer to your employees or have a more diverse employee base? This is collapse. This is the end of the modern industrial era, the one that we were born into. It's done. It's done some really cool things. I've benefited. You've benefited. Many have been harmed, and the world that supports us, that allows us to breathe and eat and be well and have fun and recreate and do all the things we like to do, will not tolerate, is not tolerating the continuation of these extractive, harmful, oppressive norms. Those are really negative words. So for me to up my brave will look like sitting comfortably within that darkness and knowing there is light, but we cannot get to it if we are not open and real and honest in ways we don't even know we're not being, about what is happening and why it is happening. And then welcome the real path forward and out of this darkness.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's easy and fun to say to you. I get a little goosebumpy when I say it, but the truth is when I speak with, and I'll keep it anonymous, but just earlier today, I was speaking with somebody whom I respect deeply. She's kind and generous to me. She's quite senior in the US business community. And I can hear that there's still this like, yeah, we just need better policy. And it's like, no, actually, look what policy is pushing for, just more EVs. It's either more EVs or fewer EVs. I don't hear anybody saying we need to rip up pavement and plant fruit and nut trees.
Yeah, why are there not fruit and nut trees on the street sides? It baffles me.
Or on what we now call the streets. Why are there so many bloody streets? You do not need every single residential street to be paved, for goodness sake. Give us back our paths. Give us back our interconnected communal spaces where we can see one another and make eye contact. And give us genuine awareness of what it means to be alive and what it means to serve life instead of having life serve all of these economic monstrosities that we call progress. It's really awkward for me to say that to people who aren't already like, yeah, where are the fruit and nut trees, you know? Because somebody wiser than me, I always forget who said this quote, but something like, you know, my job depends on not, I'm not even, it's too late in my mind, but the truth that's going to make my job obsolete is not the truth I'm going to embrace and pay somebody to come and, you know, keynote at my event about. No. Like, we'll get the guy who's funny but still talks about eco-efficiency. So that's where I'm going to up my brave. Mark my words.
Great. I look forward to it. And I would love to connect you with our Greenwash show and see if we can get you on there to go deeper into some of the stuff that you're so well researched in that area, so much experience. And I want to tap into that. So I'd love to share with people what is coming up for you. How can they connect with you online?
Awesome. Well, thanks, Nat. Yeah. So probably the best place is my website. So my URL is blorainesmith.com. My first initial shoved in there because last name Smith makes me invisible. So blorainesmith.com. And all my socials are linked there. I'm pretty algorithm shy, so I don't do a lot in socials. I'll probably be doing even less in the coming days. But from there, you can link to my YouTube channel, which we'll see. That is one social place I'll probably be doing a little more. And some premium content coming online in early September that I'm really excited to share to go into more detail on some of what I'm seeing out there.
Amazing. And you've been doing so much of this work for so long. It's great to have it all in one place. Anything else you want to share with us before we wrap it up?
Just deep gratitude and an awareness that, you know, it's kind of corny to say we're all connected, but you and I grew up, what, 12 houses away from one another around the corner on Douglas Crescent. Our dads were great friends. Our moms were great friends. Your mom taught my sister to play the guitar, which was life-changing in terms of her career.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
And years later, here we are talking to one another from around the world and looking to really bring more light. So I'm just full of gratitude and awe at the amazingness that is this crazy old universe we're in. So thank you so much, Nat.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. It's so funny because I think it was my dad that reconnected us. And so for my listeners, I've lived in New Zealand for 27 years. So I missed every wedding, every baby, you know, every 50th, every 21st. Like I missed all the things with all my childhood friends and high school friends and university friends. And it's funny how certain people come back into your life, right? Like they just circle back in at the right time. And my dad said to me, oh, well, we were talking to Denise and, you know, apparently Lori's got shares some of your views. You know, he said something like that.
She's crazy like you.
Yeah, you should be in touch. And I'm like, oh, thanks, Pa. Cool. Yeah. So obviously awesome. Our parents were talking about us. I'm sure it was all, you know, positive and amazing.
Only good. Only good, right, Mom? Awesome.
All right. So great to connect with you and share some of your thoughts. And thank you so much for coming in, Lori, today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Nat. Looking forward to keeping in touch. Bye for now.
Awesome. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.